The front page you have here on top is taken from the World Book Encyclopedia. Now, one thing I learned about going through all the encyclopedias which we have in the Yeshiva Library is that never trust an encyclopedia. And I'll tell you why, because none of them describe in detail exactly how an elevator works, which makes it problematic in halacha. If you looked at the description of an elevator as described here, you would think there's no problem riding an elevator on Shabbos. Why? Let's see. The way an elevator works is described here. How elevator works. Do you see that? The second paragraph in the article, the second section of the article. How elevators work. Most elevators operate automatically, but some are run by attendants who ride in the cars. A person brings an elevator to a certain floor by pushing a button in the wall outside the shaft. The elevator doors open automatically after the car arrives at the floor, and they close after the passenger has entered. The passenger pushes a button to indicate the floor where he or she wants the elevator to stop. The car stops at all floors where the passengers want to be picked up or wish to get out. And it goes on to describe what elevators are used in different buildings. Let's skip a paragraph. Gearless traction elevators are used in office buildings of more than 10 floors and in residential buildings of more than 30 floors. They travel at speeds of 500 feet per minute or faster. The one in the John Hancock Tower and the Sears Tower travels 1,800 feet per minute. A gearless traction elevator has at least three steel cables called hoisting ropes that lift the car. One end of each cable is attached to the car. The other end is connected to a heavy steel counterweight that balances the weight of the car at about half of its maximum passenger load. Got that? That's important. If you look at the picture which they have here, the car is held by cable, which goes over a pulley called the sheave, to a counterweight. The counterweight, that heavy steel counterweight on the back of the elevator, is the weight of the elevator plus an additional approximately 50% of what the elevator can carry. Okay? The counterweight reduces to a minimum the power needed to operate the elevator. The hoisting ropes wrap around the grooves of a sheave pulley that is connected directly to an electric motor. As the sheave turns, the ropes move and the car goes up or down. A brake holds the car in place when the elevator stops. Now again, theoretically, it's a very simple idea. You have a weight, two weights. You have the elevator as one weight, and you have the counterweight, which is the other weight. And when one weight goes down, the other weight goes up. When one weight goes up, the other one goes down. Back and forth and back and forth. Now, if that was true, why do you need a motor? Because obviously, there's sometimes when the weight, which is heavier, will have to be lifted, right? Sometimes the counterweight is heavier than the empty elevator. And at that point, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to use electric power to lift the empty elevator up against the force of gravity, right? Sometimes the counterweight is going to be lighter than the loaded elevator, but yet you want the elevator to rise, right? So at that point, you're going to have to use the electric power to lift the elevator up against the force of gravity. So that's why you need electric power. Right? You need electric power because although the use of weights reduces the amount of power needed, it doesn't completely eliminate the need for power in order to get the elevator to go those times it has to go against the force of gravity. The thing is like this. Now, I'm sure I'm going to get this wrong the first time I say it because it's complicated. So hopefully the second time I'll get it right. There's excess energy generated when the elevator is going down. Why is that so? Because the energy, the motor, is turning constantly at more or less the same speed. When it's going up, all that power is needed to lift the elevator. When it's going down, then some of that power is not necessary, because the force of gravity drives the elevator down. What happens to all that excess power generated by the motor? There's a surplus of electricity. This is not described in any of the articles in any of the encyclopedias about elevators. Where does the excess electricity go? The answer is that the excess electricity is fed into the building's electrical wiring system, and it lights up lights and drives appliances in the building at that time. In other words, the elevator actually, to a certain extent, diminishes the amount of electricity which the building needs from ComEd or from whatever utility company, because when the elevator is going down, excess energy is being produced by the electric motor, which is being shunted off into the building to various different places in order to make appliances run. Sometimes it'll happen when the weight is going down as well.
So when anything is going down.
Right, whenever anything is going down. Right.
The
thing is, generally, when the weight is going down, the weight is usually heavier than the elevator. Right? Unless the elevator is full to capacity, the weight is 50% heavier than the elevator itself.
The way it was described is that the elevator is, I'm sorry, that the weight is approximately an elevator. Weighs the same thing as the
elevator plus 50% of the load.
50% load.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So, in other words, what you're saying is if it's less than the 50% load.
Right.
When it's less than the 50% load.
Yeah.
Then there is.
See, I told you it's complicated.
Well, yeah. Then there's extra energy. Let's see if we can get this yet. If it's less than 50% load, then there's extra energy.
Which way you're going? Depends which way you're going.
Down.
What's going up? Is the cab going up or the cab's going down?
Cab's going down,
okay.
And there's less than 50% load.
It doesn't matter, because the electric motor is running at a constant rate. Since it's running at a constant rate, every time the elevator goes down, there's excess energy siphoned off.
Right.
Because it's running at a constant rate which is needed in order to raise the elevator, right? Which is when it's going down, there's...
Maybe
the
constant rate required to break the elevator from going down. I mean, I don't
know. No, to cause the elevator to go up, as much as would be needed to cause the elevator to go up against the counterweight. That much is always being generated. Okay? Let's start with empty. Let's say the elevator, just for our purposes, let's say the elevator weighs 100 tons. And the counterweight weighs 150 tons. And the maximum weight which the elevator can carry is 100 tons, right? So altogether would have been 200 tons, right? At all times, the elevator is running, the elevator motor is running a strength which is sufficient to drive the elevator up against the counterweight, which weighs 50 tons more than the elevator.
What happens when it stops at a floor?
Okay? At the amount, it's producing the amount of lift necessary to lift a completely empty elevator against those 50 extra tons of counterweight. Okay, that's what it's produced. That's what the motor is producing.
The elevator, the counterweight was 150.
Right.
And the elevator was
100.
So in order to lift.
So a completely empty elevator requires 50
it
tons.
Doesn't require anything.
What?
You release the brakes so that. And the 150 comes down and the elevator shoots up through the ceiling.
Oh, you're right. The other way around. That's right. It's being produced. It's running the elevator. I'm sorry. The elevator is being run at the amount of power needed to lift the elevator. If it was fully full, if it would weigh 200 tons, against that counterweight, which weighs 150 tons. So the elevator motor is always producing an extra 50 tons of power. Now, whenever the elevator goes down, it doesn't need, it's always, the elevator motor is always producing that extra 50 tons of power. Again,
I hear what you're saying.
But let me repeat it anyway. The counterweight weighs 150 tons. A fully loaded elevator weighs 200 tons. The elevator motor is always producing the amount of power required in order to raise an extra 50 tons of weight opposite that 150-ton counterweight. Now, when it goes down, it needs less than that extra power. By definition, it's going to need less than that. No matter what the weight of the elevator going down is, even if it's completely empty, since the elevator weighs less, it's not going to need anywhere near that amount of power. No. And that's why every time you go down, there is excess energy going out.
That I'm not sure about.
So that you can read that in the Hebrew. I have to take their word for it, but that is what he write, what they write here on the second page. Kol Ma'alit Pnuya. And they speak about the torque there. It's called Metach in Hebrew. Yeah.
You say that the motor runs at a constant level. Is that when it's in motion, or does it also run, let's say, when the elevator stops on the floor?
Even when the elevator stopped, it's still running.
It's still running, and that excess energy also goes into the power system.
Right. So the thing is like this. The problem is then, not so much when you go up an elevator, but when you go down in an elevator, you are creating, by your added weight, you're creating excess energy, right? Because the motor is now running at a certain power level which is not necessary. And therefore, that energy is going off and lighting electric lights and turning mixers and powering radios in offices or homes throughout the building. And this is a psik ratio de Nicole. Now, what do we mean by that? The certain... The electric motor then acts as a generator which spills out, which shunts off the electricity into the building system. In other words, let's say it's a whatever engine it is. Yeah, it's generating electricity, a gasoline-driven engine, even if it's an electric engine.
There's a big difference between a gasoline engine and,
right.
and an electric engine.
Yeah.
That's why I brought up the idea.
Yeah. For some reason, you're right, I don't fully understand what the difference is, but the way they describe in the literature, even an electric, fully electric elevator, when this motor is turning and the energy is not needed for the elevator itself, it's acting as a generator and producing excess electricity, which then is shunted off to the building. That's the way it's described. Now, you obviously know much, I told you in the Hebrew on the second page here. Okay, and I told you, you obviously know much more about electric motors than I do. But that's the way it's described. That's the way it's described, that the electricity is being generated in the motor, and that's going to the building. And there's another example.
So what is the issue there at all?
I'll tell you in a second, but let me just tell you something else. Also, when an elevator slows down before it breaks to a stop at each floor, there's also excess electricity. That excess electricity, because now there's power which is not needed. Because it's breaking, it's stopping. There shouldn't be a buildup in the circuit, so to speak, that electricity is shunted off also to the building system to power appliances in the building. Yeah.
Yeah, it's there to power new lights.
Yeah.
People aren't turning them on. If they're not turning on, electricity isn't turning on.
Right. We'll get to that point later on. You're right. That's a valid point. Let's leave it alone for now. For time being, let's assume that your electricity is actually powering an electric light, right? It's going through an incandescent light bulb. The excess electricity which you caused in the system by adding weight when you go down is now powering a light bulb in apartment 3A. Okay? Now, what? Let's say it's on. We'll come to that later on. There's going to be a light on somewhere in the building, right? Some light is going to be on somewhere.
When the cab goes down,
yes.
Right. So the surplus electricity is lighting up lights.
Lighting up lights, right?
When you step in the elevator, so you are making it. So what are you doing? You're creating more surplus.
You're creating more surplus when you step in the elevator and are going down. Okay?
In other words, a building could have a few elevators.
Yeah. Well, something has to power the electric motor, which powers the elevator. So they need electricity at least for that purpose. Right, but they might save a lot of electricity from the power company. That's right. Now, I'm not making this up. Now, this is a problem, because there is a halacha by Hilchos Shabbos called Psik Reisha D'Nichole. Something which is going to happen as a result of activity which you're doing, when it's something which is beneficial for you, is considered as if you did it directly. And the classic case, which the Gemara discusses, of course, is, let's say you want to play with a chicken's head on Shabbos. You don't have any dead chickens, so you kill a chicken in order to get its head. This is a game which the kids used to play in the old days, chicken's heads. So in any event, so you cut off the chicken's head, and you say, but I don't want to kill a chicken. All I want is the head. I'm perfectly happy that the chicken should continue to run around and survive and lay eggs and everything else. You can't do that. Why? That's called psik resha v'lo yamus. Can you cut off a head and the chicken won't die? It is a necessary outcome of your activity that the chicken will die whenever you cut off its head. It's got to happen. Now, in halacha, there are two types of psik resha. There's some psik reshas which are nichale, which you like this case, you want to have the chicken's head, right? You want the results of the killing of the chicken, which is a chicken's head. And sometimes it's lo nichale. Sometimes you don't want the result. A classic example of not wanting the result, which the Gemara gives, is a case where you are gathering twigs for a fire. Let's say on Yontif. You're gathering twigs for a fire when you're allowed to gather twigs. However, as a result of your gathering twigs, the field from which you're gathering the twigs now is cleared for the purposes of planting. That's an issue. You're not allowed to clear a field for the purpose of planting on Shabbos or Yontif. But only where it's your own field are you interested in the outcome. Only where it's your own field in which you are going to plant is it a psik resha d'nichole. The outcome is beneficial to me. Where it's somebody else's field, it's not beneficial to me. It's not nichole. I don't care if his field is cleared for planting or not, unless we're going to make money on the deal, obviously. So therefore, that's a psik resha d'lo nichole. I'm not interested in the outcome, and that is not Osur midoraisa on Shabbos. The Torah does not forbid such activity. The rabbis perhaps prohibited it. But midoraisa, it's not prohibited. However, a psik resha, the nichali, when I have a benefit from the activity, then it is an isur doraisa. So here what's happening. The lighting of the lights, the creation, all these, this excess electricity, which is going to be used to power lights and appliances in the building, is a psik resha, the nichali. I'm interested in the outcome. I'm interested in the outcome because if those lights don't turn on, then I'm not going to be able to use the elevator. So therefore, I must have those lights turn on. I must have that electricity supplied to the building in order that I should be able to use this elevator. And that's why it's nichli. And what'd you want to ask?
Well, the thing about the chicken, yeah. Are you going to use the chicken for
Shabbos? No, you can't. Killing it on Shabbos.
No, not on Shabbos.
No, I'm talking about on Shabbos. No, killing it on Shabbos. Why it's forbidden to cut off the head on Shabbos, not before Shabbos.
Well, there's
a lot of reasons why it's forbidden. No, but that's the idea of psik resha is that even though I'm not interested in killing a chicken, I'm just interested in getting the head of the chicken, nonetheless, since as a natural outcome of getting the head, the chicken will die, therefore I'm forbidden to cut off a chicken's head on Shabbos just because I'm forbidden to kill animals on Shabbos. And the same thing here. Even though I'm right now riding in an elevator, nonetheless, since as a natural outcome of that, I'm causing lights to come on in the building, therefore I'm forbidden to ride in the elevator on Shabbos. Even though I'm not directly involved in it, since it's 100% natural and automatic outcome of my activity, it's forbidden for me to do it on Shabbos. We'll get to that. 1 second. Yeah, we're just starting. Yeah. You're right. You're not causing lights to come on, but you're supplying the fuel. Let me ask you a question like this. If you have a candle, an oil candle on Shabbos, are you allowed to add oil to that burning candle? So this would be similar.
No, because it's your candle and it's for your benefit. What do you care what happens in 3A? I don't even know anybody in 3A.
Let's say I go into 3A, I put oil in the candle, then I leave the room. I don't know a person in 3A. I just have an anonymous person. I went to his room, poured oil into his candle, and now it's going to burn for an extra 15 minutes and I leave the room.
But the other part is if there were no elevator, there still would be electricity in the building.
Oh, so. That's a good point. We'll come back to that later. That's a very good point. Okay? So you want to ask anything for? Okay. Now, there are other problems, by the way, with regular elevators. The other problems are two. Actually, three. One of them is that in modern elevators, they have very often in the floor of the elevator load cells. Anybody know what a load cell is?
But if it's too heavy, it doesn't work.
It's a weight. Yeah, it measures the weight electronically of the people on the elevator. So, you know, in the old days, they used to have to make scales with springs. They don't have to do that anymore. The electronic cells, which can measure weight based on the amount of pressure which is placed on the cell, and they embed those in the floor of modern elevators, and that way the elevator gauges whether it's a safe weight or not a safe weight, and how much power has to be supplied to the elevator in order to conserve power, etc., etc. So when you're stepping on this cell, A, you might be completing a circuit, and B, you're causing some indicator to go off somewhere. So that's going to be a major problem. If you have any of these cells embedded in the floor of the elevator in which you're riding, you can't ride in it on Shabbos. The second problem, which is more obvious, is that, of course, we all know that if you're running for a door, an elevator whose door is about to close, and you stick your hand in by the door, then what's going to happen? The elevator doors are going to come open again. Why is that so? There's an electric eye. So again, with the electric eye, you are completely tripping a circuit and causing a motor to run, the motor which opens the doors, when you walk into that elevator. So in order to achieve a Shabbos elevator, permissible Shabbos elevator, A, there cannot be any load cells in the floor of the elevator, and you have to ascertain that ahead of time. And B, you have to make sure there's no photoelectric eye which is being used in the elevator at that point.
Yeah. Originally.
A timer?
A set amount of time given, and the door is automatically closed.
Uh-huh.
But if you happen to be in the way when the doors are scheduled to close, then it'll keep it open.
That may be true, but how are you going to know when the doors are about to close? In other words, you can walk in very quickly at the beginning.
Quickly, no problem.
It's possible. I don't know, but I'm not sure the eye might be in. Might be on.
The doors are open.
Yeah.
You're right, as far as the controls are. But from the minute the doors are open, that electric guy is working. When you walk through, it doesn't even open anymore.
Does it delay the closing?
When you walk through, you break the circuit. Uh-huh. And I don't know what effect it has.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk about that. If you break a circuit, it doesn't have any effect. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That would be also a problem, though. That would be the same problem if you had a pressure bar on. Okay, it's getting late. Let's go further. Now, before we solve the question of Shabbos elevators in general, we have to speak about a more basic philosophical question concerning Hilchos Shabbos. And this basic philosophical question, by the way, all of this is in the Hebrew, which is on the next two pages, but I'm not going to read it with you inside because it's in Hebrew. But you can follow, you see here on page 2, in the bottom of the first column, you see how an elevator works. And B, we're going to be discussing now everything it says under the heading of Birur Musagim, which is from a book put out by the Machon Mada'i Technologi L'Bayot Ba'Alacha, the Scientific Technological Institute for Problems in Halacha in Yerushalayim. And the basic problem is like this. What is the status of melachos, which I do on Shabbos just by living a natural life? By that I mean, if you come into a room, or for that matter, and there's a potted plant there, and you breathe in the room, what are you doing? Carbon dioxide, you're causing the plant to grow, right? Isser d'oraisa. Causing a plant to grow is a very basic Isser d'oraisa on Shabbos, right? Everybody knows not about the plant on Shabbos, not to cause a plant to grow. If you go and open a door in the room where there's a candle burning, you're letting more oxygen into the room. What's going to happen? Candle's going to burn more. Everybody knows it's not allowed to make a candle burn on Shabbos. If you walk by certain flowers, I don't know which they are, but he brings down the certain flowers, if you walk by them and cast a shade on the flowers, they immediately begin to close up, just like they do at night. And you're impeding the growth of that flower. Shouldn't be allowed to walk by that flower, stand by such a flower and schmooze. Why? Because then you're going to be transgressing the Isser d'oraisa of impeding the flower's growth. Right? All these things should be forbidden to do on Shabbos. Another thing, if you have a pot on, or for that matter, even near a fire, on Shabbos, you're allowed to remove a pot from a fire. Certain parameters when you're allowed to put it back. But on the main, you're allowed to remove a pot from the fire without any problem. Everybody knows if you remove a pot from the fire is going to burn brighter and stronger, which is the Isser d'oraisa, the forbidden melacha of... What are you transgressing? Mavir, lo sevaru eish. So how can you ever remove a pot from a fire on Shabbos? There are many melachas, I'm sure you can think of a whole bunch more, which we constantly transgress every Shabbos just by the virtue of the fact that we're living. Now, the famous Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah in his introduction to Hilchos Shabbos says, the Hilchos Shabbos are so complicated, and there's so many of them, that you might get the urge to say, you know what, I'm just going to sit on a stool all of Shabbos, not move and not take any chances. Says the Mishnah Berurah, it's not going to help, because then you're going to transgress Isser being Levatel Onik Shabbos. You won't get any pleasure out of Shabbos. So either way, you're lost, right? So the question is, to what extent is that true, that you're stuck on Shabbos and that you can't do anything, or that whichever way you turn, you're going to transgress and do a malacha? So the person who wrote this, Rabbi Halpern, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Halpern, came to a tentative logical conclusion, which is that Melechus Machshavis, the type of malacha which the Torah forbade us to do on Shabbos, is only malacha which stems from an act which is specifically designed, not necessarily by you, because you can transgress a malacha unintentionally, but it's specifically designed to perform a malacha. For instance, if you are going somewhere in order to make a candle burn brighter, even it could be unintentionally, you forgot it's Shabbos, or you're not aware of what you're doing, that's a malacha. If you open the door specifically to get oxygen into the room, that would be a malacha. If you're just opening the door in order to walk into the room, and you're not doing it with any intention whatsoever to bring oxygen into the room, that's okay. If you're walking by a plant, and you have some intention, even a subconscious intention, to cause the flower to close up, then that's transgressing malacha on Shabbos. If you're just walking by because you're walking by, or you happen to stand there to rest for a moment, that's not considered to be Chilul Shabbos. Yeah, what are you saying?
What's the Sfarah?
The Torah didn't forbid you to live on Shabbos. There can't be any other way of understanding it. Otherwise, you'd have to be very careful not to breathe in a room where there's a potted plant.
What's the difference between slapping a bench?
We'll get to it. We're slapping a bench? Because since that's the principle of psik resha, then it's, by definition, slapping benches is a malacha because the resultant activity is inherently the causing of a hole in the ground. Because when you have to say, based on this, I mean, you have no choice. You have to say,
I
understand. No. I'm trying to formulate it. You have to say that in a case where you're just walking into a room, that's considered to be part of the activity which is required of a normal living human being and is part of the normal routine. And that's permissible. Schlepping a bench is not part of the normal routine of living. It might be permissible if you're dragging it across a stone floor, but it's impermissible since it's not part of the normal routine of living when you're doing it across a soft piece of mud outside in the backyard. So anything which is routinely part of living is permissible. Anything which is extraordinary is questionable. It might be permissible nonetheless, depending on the parameters of Hilchos Shabbos, but it might be impermissible. Yeah?
Turning on the cold water.
Turning on the cold water does what?
You turn on a pump.
You turn on a pump somewhere in the city.
Absolutely.
You're right. Yeah, same idea. That's right.
I mean, there's no question about that. Right? You just take out one drop of water. You contributed to turning on a pump.
Yeah, right. That would be included in that.
That's not as remote as...
It's not even as remote. Right.
But again, you know, that's...
It's a very good question. But it's a very good question. You're asking... Let's formulate it not as a question, not as support for this hypothesis. You're asking, how can you turn on the cold water on Shabbos if you're turning on a pump somewhere in the city by doing so? Good question. Let's come back to it in a few minutes. Yeah.
You're discussing, when you say the way you normally live, I guess that'd have to be in 1993. Because, for example,
as opposed to 1893. Yeah.
Because they didn't have running water back then. And if you said you had running water, that'd be something amazing. Well, you have running water, and that'd be a malacha-oriented thing. If you put out the water, and you had a pump running in your house.
You're right.
Nowadays, it's no longer malacha.
You're making a valid point, which is a question. I'm not agreeing with you. I'm accepting what you're saying as a question. What you're asking, now that life is more complicated, so does it make more things mutter? On the contrary, should we prohibit modern living and require everybody on Shabbos to go back to 1893 because it has to go by the normal course of events at the time of the Talmud or at the time of the Shas and Poskim. Right. Good question. Okay. We go further. Okay. We're going to leave that open for a moment. Now, before I go on to discuss the questions which you just raised about electric about pumps for water and all that, there is an interesting question which is a little bit off on a tangent, but we have to recognize that it's a valid point nonetheless. There's the Beis Yitzchak. The Beis Yitzchak was Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkus, a very big posik in Hungary in the early part of the 20th century, who was asked, what issur is there in riding a trolley on Shabbos? Electric trolley. What issur is there riding, for that matter, an elevated train, a subway? What issur is there in riding it on Shabbos? Assuming you get on without pain. You have a rabbi's pass. You know? So you don't have to carry either. So what is this then, riding an electric train? And Taka? Yeah. Okay, so the Taka, there is no Isser, besides Marisayin. Marisayin, what do we mean by Marisayin? It's a public desecration of the spirit of Shabbos. Now, this is a very sensitive issue. Because here again, at the very fine lines, what exactly is considered to be a public desecration of the spirit of Shabbos? It's very subjective. Because what one person's desecration of the spirit of Shabbos might be somebody else's onik Shabbos, right? You might hold that carrying where there's an Erev is desecrating the spirit of Shabbos, and somebody else will say to you, carrying, making an Erev and carrying is my onik Shabbos. So a very difficult fine line to tread. But we have certain parameters which are given down to us in the poskim. First of all, the Gemara says, you're not allowed to make loud, unnatural noises on Shabbos. The classic example given there in the Gemara is millstones, which grind by water power. They're on a river. They're turned by the water. I'm not doing anything. The water's doing it. I'm not allowed to have my millstones grind on Shabbos. Why? It desecrates the public, the atmosphere of Shabbos in public. A similar idea is expressed by the Chazon Ish in terms of umbrellas. The Noda B'Yehuda forbids using umbrellas on Shabbos because of some logic of making an ohel, making a tent. Chazon Ish doesn't buy that. He says that an umbrella is not a tent. But he says it's also to use an umbrella on Shabbos. Says why it's also to use an umbrella? Again, because it's Av Shamilsa, a public desecration of the Shabbos spirit. And he says you should know the principle, Chazon Ish. He says public desecration of the spirit of Shabbos is worse in scope than any specific transgression of the Surim of Shabbos. And he says if you keep a store open on Shabbos, even though you might not transgress any Isser D'Oraisa of Shabbos, because there's no Isser D'Oraisa, there's no biblical ban on making sales on Shabbos, you're transgressing a far worse Isser. You're desecrating in public the spirit of Shabbos. And that's why he bans umbrellas. He says it goes against the grain of things which should be done on Shabbos. So the same thing applies, the Beis Yitzchak applies to trolleys. It says riding on a trolley, it's not Marisayin. Maris Ayin is doing something which can be construed as forbidden. Here there's nothing inherently forbidden in riding a trolley. What? Let's say you have a lapel button which says that you're a potter from pain. Or everybody knew in the entire city. You know, you lived in Haifa and they made Shabbos tickets for the Carmelites. You know? So everybody knew you didn't pay on Shabbos. Nonetheless, Av Shemilsa is distinct from Maris Ayin. Even though people have no concept, no possible conception of you as transgressing an Isser, you're not allowed to publicly desecrate the spirit of Shabbos. So according to this, so many poskim want to come in Aser elevators just for that reason. They say it's not sugepast, it's not proper to ride an elevator on Shabbos. It desecrates the spirit of the Shabbos, the spirit of the day. But again, as I say, it's a very highly subjective thing to say such a thing. Yeah. No, you can't ride a train on Shabbos. See, people are going to make a mistake and say I was Beckhoffer was Mati riding trains on Shabbos. No, you're not allowed to ride a train on Shabbos.
The trolley
either. It's because Am Yisrael has accepted upon himself, the Jewish nation has accepted upon itself based on the statements of all these rabbis that this is considered to be an act which publicly profanes and desecrates the spirit of the Shabbos day. Why?
Okay.
What would be wrong with getting on and off?
I don't know.
So, what's the basis of your question?
Well, that means that if somebody's going past an apartment,
That's different. No. Because when you get into a car, you're causing the engine to work harder. One person on a trolley doesn't make an appreciable difference.
Now, the umbrella.
Yeah.
It's also because you're giving the wrong impression on
Shabbos. Right, exactly. According to Chazon Ish, there are other sources who held that umbrellas also on Shabbos for other reasons. Creating a tent, which is forbidden because of bonets, as if you're building something on Shabbos. But the Chazon Ish limits says that the Esser is Absha Milsa, public, the desecration of Shabbos.
Right, because people
yeah.
open up the umbrella before Shabbos.
Right. Right, the Chazon Ish holds even if you open before Shabbos, it's still not proper to go on Shabbos with it.
We were told that I was from Washington. Yeah.
You have to open it before Shabbos.
Before Shabbos.
Yeah. Right. That's a separate issue. Yeah.
According to the Chazon Ish, yeah. You wanted an umbrella open in your house for whatever reason. You open it before Shabbos. You could technically use it then. Or is this...
No. Absha Milsa is only in your own house.
Absha Milsa means that the fact that it has... It's against the spirit of Shabbos
wherever you go. Even the privacy of your own house. Okay. You're not allowed to have a radio or television going even in your own room. I mean, sometimes you leave the clock radio on inadvertently, but you're not allowed to have it going even in your own room because Avshar Milsa applies even to your own Chadrei Chadorim. Okay? Now, however, getting back to more objective Yisurim, the Shmir Shabbos Kilchosa, the Paskins, that there is a concept of Shabbos elevators. Now, how do the Shabbos elevators work? We'll get to in a moment. But first, from Shlomo Zalman, discusses the issues which we've discussed before, including turning on cold water on Shabbos and things of that nature. He discusses a regular elevator. He says there's several things you have to look at. The first thing we have to look at when you get into a regular elevator is that you're causing more power to be generated at the power station. Anytime you cause an electric motor to work harder, you're causing more power to be generated, by definition. Then we require more power in order to power the appliance which you're using. If you turn on an appliance on Shabbos, besides any other Isser, you're causing now more electricity be generated at the power station, wherever that is. If you're using an appliance in a way which places an added burden on it, you're also causing more electricity to be generated. Why, in and of itself, does not that with the trolley, if a trolley worked the same way, if they're generating more power? But like I say, it's very, very negligible by a trolley. You're not adding more that much more weight. In other words, by an elevator, each person in the elevator makes a difference. By a trolley, it's very makes an negligible difference. I don't fully understand why, but I think it's because a trolley weighs a lot more as is, and the elevator does not. It's much more sensitive. But in any event, Shlomo Zalman says it's not necessarily so. He says, because in reality, it's most likely that somewhere in the city, at the same time that you get into an elevator, somebody has just turned off a light in their room. Right? If you think about it, it's almost impossible for you to get an elevator at the same time that everybody else in the entire city or the entire country or whoever is being supplied by the power station has left all of their appliances on. Just like you started using an appliance, somebody else somewhere else must have stopped using an appliance. And even if they, it's not that they must have stopped, since the odds are very good that they've just stopped using an appliance, there is no psik resha. It's not necessarily going to cause an increase in the supply of current which is being produced. It's going to remain steady, but it's not going to increase the supply. You're not adding. There's no additional malacha being done for you. All right, that's good. You're not adding any malacha, but who's to say that the fact that you're maintaining a malacha being done doesn't in and of itself create a problem? So on this, Shlomo Zalman wants to say that a very basic concept, which applies also to the question of the lights in the building, right? Remember, way back when we started, we said that the lights in the building are being powered when you're going down the elevator as a result of you. Because now, the supply has switched from the ComEd to Yosef Beckhoffer riding down in the elevator. I'm now causing that power to come into the system as opposed to the city or the utility causing the power to come to the system. So why, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, is that not inherently usur? He says because any melacha which is not nikar is not a melacha. Any melacha, what, even seek ratio, any melacha which doesn't have a recognizable and clearly demonstrable result is not considered to be a melacha. And he gives a few examples. He says, we know you're not allowed to turn coals over on Shabbos. You know, you have a fire which is going, and in your oven, you have a wood-burning oven, and there are coals there. You're not allowed to rake the coals on Shabbos. Not allowed to turn them over and rake them. Why not? Why? Says? The interesting lush, which is brought down by the postgame, because you're cooking whatever's on the fire faster. It's going to cook faster. So says Reb Shlomo Zalman, it's brought down Rabbi Akiva Eger, or Ritva, which says it's going to cook faster. Says Reb Shlomo Zalman, why did they say a very simple thing? Why did they say that if I rake the coals, then parts of the coals which were not burning before are going to be burning now? Why did he say that now, when I turned over the coals, something else is moving in, and something else is going to be closer to the fire, and something else is going to be burning instead of what was burning originally? Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, the reason is because that is not an issur d'oraisa, because at this point, I am not doing something which is recognizable to be any different from the moment before. It's only recognizable in the result of the thing which is on top cooking faster and better. But in the fire itself, there's no recognizable difference between the moment before and the moment after. And therefore, that's not inherently osur. So there's another few examples of that. There's interesting halacha. Some people, not everybody, hold that you can drag a plant from one end, let's say, to make it easy, of your backyard to another end of your backyard. Say you have a plant, a potted plant, but the plant has holes in it. So you know, if you have a plant, not the plant has holes in it, the pot has holes in it. So you know, if you have a potted plant, which has holes in the pot, you're not allowed to pick that pot off the ground and put it on the table on Shabbos. Why? Because we paskin that a potted plant is considered to be, potted plant which has a hole in it, is considered to be connected to the ground. The moisture rises up from the ground through the holes into the plant and goes and feeds the plant. Therefore, if you take the plant off the ground and put it on a table, it's as if you're harvesting the plant at that point. How are you harvesting the plant? You're moving a plant which was connected to the ground onto a table, and now its connection to the ground is severed. So you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. But some poskim say you're allowed to move the plant from one side of your garden to the other side of your garden. Why are you allowed to do that? When you moved it to the second part of the garden, it's now deriving moisture from the ground as a result of your activity. And since it's as a result of your activity, you now should be considered to be transgressing the Issa D'Oraisa on planting. Right? If you put water plant on Shabbos, that's an Issa D'Oraisa planting, because you're causing the plant to grow. Why is this not the same Issa D'Oraisa? So the answer is, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, according to those poskim who allow it, is because you are not making any discernible change in the growth of the plant from the moment before. You haven't put it on top of a table, you haven't severed its connection. You've moved its connection, that's not considered to be an issur. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, it's an interesting Rashba. The Rashba says, you know, if you write with ink on top of pencil, then you transgressed Issa D'Oraisa of kosev, of writing on Shabbos. But only because, says the Rashba, you improved on the writing, because pencil doesn't last, and ink does last. As for Shlomo Zalman, I understand. What difference does it make the fact that you've improved? You've written. Let's say it was ink on top of ink. Why isn't it forbidden, midaraisa? You transgress kosev. You wrote. Hi, you traced. You wrote exactly on top of what was there before. So what? You wrote. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, no. From here we see the same principle. In order to transgress an Isser D'oraisa, you must be doing something which is now recognizable as distinct from the moment before. And that's not happening here. The same thing he says, there's a Tzahar Tzvir, Tzipes of Frank, who says, you're allowed, let's say you have a puddle on the ground. And in the middle of the puddle, you have a tree. And you add water to the puddle on Shabbos. Says the Har Tzvi, says the Tzipes of Frank, that's okay. Why? The plant is now going to be nourished from the water you placed there as well. Again, you didn't create a new recognizable situation. There was water there before. There's water there now. You have not now done anything which is nicker. True, in essence, we should say a malacha has been performed, but it has not because the results are not recognizable.
That brings us back to the oil and the flint and the lamp.
One second. I'm coming to that. Adding fuel to a fire. Adding oil to a lamp. It's usher. Why is it usher? It's brought down. Because the lamp is going to burn longer. Till beforehand, it was only going to burn for 15 minutes. Now you added more fuel, it's going to burn for an extra 15 minutes. It's going to burn for half an hour. It's forbidden to add the fuel, not because inherently the fire is now going to burn as a result of the fuel which you added, but only because now the fire is going to burn longer. The fact that it's going to burn longer is the recognizable result of what you did. And since there's a recognizable result of what you did, that's why you transgressed the Isser Mavir. In theory, if the fire would not burn longer, and there wouldn't be any clear result from the oil which you added, you would not transgress the Isser of Mavir of creating a fire on Shabbos. By the tree in the water, there's no recognizable result of the tree living longer, or the tree growing better. So therefore, there is no Isser involved.
That's a pretty difficult argument, I think.
Right.
I mean, well, if we say the tree needs a pint of water to live for a day.
It's going to get that pint of water anyway.
But you've given it another day to live by adding that second pint.
You haven't given another day to live. I mean, maybe you've given it more nourishment, but nobody could recognize the result of that nourishment in the tree.
There's
no difference anytime. Nobody will ever see, because tomorrow it'll get rainwater or get water from the water level. Nobody's ever going to recognize the difference in the tree because of the water which you put there. Because there's already water there. You just added water to the puddle.
Are you making a distinction between people being able to recognize or things actually happening?
No, yes. Even though things
going to happen, even though it's okay as long as people will not recognize.
That's right.
Even
if something's going to happen, it doesn't make a difference as long as people cannot recognize that it has occurred. That's what Shlomo Zalman is saying. Okay, another example he gives is that carrying a lit candle. You're allowed to carry a lit candle from one place to another place. Right, let's say you have a wax candle, which is burning. And you're carrying it. Now, everybody knows when you carry a wax candle, obviously it's only about it where you're allowed to carry it. Let's say that the candlestick was on a platter, which also was holding from before Shabbos a challah. So then the platter becomes a basis l'davar aser v'davar amuter, becomes a platform which holds both something permissible and something impermissible. That's why you can carry the platform. If you have just a plain candlestick, obviously you cannot carry the candlestick because the candlestick is muktzah. But you can carry the platform, the tray on which the candlestick is resting. So, let's say it's one of these situations where you had on your tray, you had from before Shabbos your candlesticks and your salt shaker or your challah or whatever it is, and now on Shabbos you need the place on your table, the room on your table, so you're allowed to carry the tray with the lit candles from your table to your sideboard. Why? Says Rav Shlomo Zalman. When you carry the candle, everybody knows that the wax which is formed at the top of the candle which is melted starts getting mixed around. Starts moving. Just like water would move if you carried a cup. So wax which would not have burnt is now burning, or it wouldn't have burnt as soon, is now burning right now as a result of what you're doing. You're causing certain liquid wax now to be the fuel of the candle. Why is it not forbidden? So Rav Shlomo Zalman, again, because the results of the activity are not nikkur, nobody can see a discernible difference in the candle. Since you can't see a discernible difference in the candle, that is not what the Torah forbade when the Torah forbade Malacha on Shabbos. Because Rav Shlomo Zalman says the same thing is true in an elevator. In an elevator, even though when I'm going down, I'm causing electricity now to be shunted from the elevator motor into the building and causing electric lights to go on, there's no discernible difference. The light was on a moment ago and the light is on now. And therefore, since the light was on a moment ago and the light was on now, and there's no difference which anybody can tell being done, therefore it does not fall into the category of things which are malacha, which are forbidden on Shabbos. If now, by going down, I'd be turning on a light, somehow there'd be some system in which the electricity is now causing the light to go on. So then, I would say, you know what? That's takasur. Because now I'm directly causing the light to go on by going down. But the light is on anyway. It was on a moment ago, it's on now, it's going to be on after I get out of the elevator. The fact that somebody switches on and off is tangential, that doesn't make a difference. They don't take that into account. Therefore, there's no discernible difference caused by my activity. It's okay for me to do that on Shabbos. That's what Shlomo Zalman wants to theorize. Says it's a little bit gruesome, I know, I'm sorry, but there's halacha that one is not allowed to kill a child. Everybody knows that right now to kill a child, one of the Horeg Valyavors. Are you allowed, you're allowed, however, to be thrown against the child and the child will be crushed to death as a result of your being thrown against him. Why? Because you're passive. You're not doing anything. The Torah forbade you to actively kill somebody. But the Torah didn't forbid you to be a stone, a rock, which somebody throws against somebody else. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, what would happen if a guy came to you and said, put a gun to your head and said, step into this elevator, which is going to go down and kill a child underneath it at the bottom, or else I'll blow out your brains. Are you allowed to step into the elevator or not? Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, yes, you're allowed to step into the elevator. Why? Hi, part of it, the elevator is killing the child, is now going to be done as a result of your load, because your load is helping to push the elevator down. Here he says a variation on the same thing. Since the elevator would anyway have descended and crushed the child, if not because of me, because of the electric motor, therefore the fact that I'm standing in the elevator is not considered to be an activity on my part. Even though, in terms of the physics of the situation, I'm now participating and causing the elevator to go down, since in terms of the what's visible and nicker to the naked eye, my standing in the elevator doesn't make a difference because the elevator would descend anyway, therefore I'm not transgressing actively the Isra of Ritzicha and I'm allowed to go into the elevator and stand there as the elevator goes down and crushes a child. What? It's not a Zevza, it's not the same thing as Zevza Gorin. It's that it would have happened anyway, so therefore what I'm doing is not nicker. Zevza Gorin, even without the Zevza Gorin. What? It's not all, it's maybe similar to that, maybe comparable, but it's not 100% the same thing. Now, here's the child who's healthy. But it's something which would have happened anyway, the fact that now I'm participating doesn't make it Asur Amita, it doesn't make it Yehorik Valyavar. Let's see that inside where he says that. It's an amazing svara. On the page 5. There's really no, on page 5 on the left, there really, it's a one just big block of text. But if you count up from the bottom, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 lines. More than that. 16 lines. 16 lines. The fifth word in the line is ach. Okay? Everybody see that? It's right after a comma. Ach avo bichay, nonetheless, near it seems, kevin sh'odam ayoret, since the person is going down, nach, is resting, veino oseklum, he's not doing anything, v'rirak nichnas tamalis, he's only going into an elevator, sh'belav achiyosayoretis, which anyway would have gone down, v'choma sh'nasa ko'es, and everything which is being done now, ayde kovid anoshim, through the weight of the people, hoya nasa kovid yuk, kamo achshav, would have been done the same way, gami loyu nimtsoim ba, even if people weren't in it, L'chein mistaber, therefore it's logical, the knisos ha'anoshim, that the entering of people into the elevator, choshiv, is considered, kach nosas masako ve'lotoch ha'malis, as if you put a heavy load into the elevator, v'lo avar klal adoraiso, and you transgress any yisr. V'av l'shitas ha'toisvus, and even according to the opinion of toisvus, become a comas in several places, linyan odom an nisra galatino, that even a person who's thrown against the child, lohargo, to kill the child, the chashiv kodem rotzeach, is considered a murderer. Mikomakom, nonetheless, here it's even better. Im amalis b'lav hochi, if the elevator, in any event, yoredes alatino kumachto, would have descended on the child and crushed him. Mistaber, it makes sense. Shim nochri, machriach l'Yisrael, if a guy forced a Jew, likonis l'toch amalis, to go into the elevator, da'av shezeh b'kum v'aseh, even though he's going and getting into the elevator on his own power, afilu achi, nonetheless, eino chay limsar atzma l'misa. You don't have to give yourself over to be killed. Came the law on umaisav, since your activity is not doing anything different, shayatino ki moich b'lav achi, because the child is going to be crushed anyway, ayidei amalis, by the elevator, biduk bo sereg, exactly at the same point in time. V'achi nami nidon didon, so to an ari issue, lenient Shabbos. In terms of Shabbos, chay gavna, etc., shenasi mela, it would have happened anyway that the elevator would have gone up and down. Rak machmas ha-koved, just because of the elevator going up and down, would have gone up and down without you in any event. It seems to me the Masha Malis Madlekis, that which as a side benefit, the elevator going down, Madlekis B'Yidosa turns on neuros at lights, Mistabe the Choshiv, it seems to me that it's considered Kilu Raka Malis Osezeh, as if only the elevator is doing it, V'loha Noshim Shabasocha, and not the people inside it, Kemet Shabalav Hachi Osezeh Madlekis, because anyway, it would have gone down and done it in any event. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman's basic svara is that when you go down in the elevator is going down anyway. The electricity is going to be on anyway. The fact that you, by going down, have changed the supply from the ComEd to the elevator generator is not recognizable to anybody, and therefore doesn't enter into the prohibition of Malach in the Torah. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, I realize that this is a little bit of a new chiddush, and perhaps it's something which, if I knew there would be an Isser D'Oraisa involved, I would not base a Maisvara permissibility to go into an elevator on Shabbos and ride down in it. But nonetheless, he says, since, anyway, this might only be Nisa D'Rabbanan. Why might only be Nisa D'Rabbanan? Because if you get into an empty elevator, if you get into the elevator which is shut off, and jump on it very, very hard, the elevator's not going anywhere. Right? The elevator only goes down because the electricity is participating in the process. And this is what you alluded to before. So therefore, in reality, I'm never doing a malacha on my own. True, when I go down, I'm causing electricity to move from the system of the elevator to the system of the building. But I can only do that with the assistance of the elevator itself. So therefore, the elevator is participating in my malacha, right? The elevator, with its electric system and the fact that it's working, is participating. There's a principle in halacha. When two people are doing malacha on Shabbos, if each one could have done it independently, and they do it together, they're both potter. Zayachov, they could have done it independently and they do it together. They're both potter. It's not an Isser D'Oraisa. They're not allowed to do it anyway, Mirabana. Two people cannot turn on a light switch. But if they're forbidden. But if they do it, they don't transgress an Isser D'Oraisa. Why? Because each one by himself could have turned on the light switch. Ze'eno Yachov, ze'eno Yachov. If you're picking up a piano and you're carrying it through Shusa Rabim, since each one of the two of you wouldn't have been able to do it by yourselves, when you do it together, you transgress an issur d'oraisa. Understand the difference? Where each one of you could have done it by yourself and you did it together, so then you don't transgress. Where each one of you could not have done it by yourself and then you did it together, then you transgress, because that malacha is defined by the participation of two people. What happens in malacha where two people are doing it, one of which could have done it on his own and the other could not have done it on his own? Zeh yachol v'zeh eino yachol. So the person who could have done it on his own is chayev. The person who could not have, I'm sorry, the person who could not have done it on his own, let me just check. Zeh yachol v'zeh eino yachol. Where one person could have done it on his own and the other person could not have done it on his own. So in this case, we say that the person who's doing it, the person who was capable of doing it by himself, is considered as if he's doing it by himself. Why? Because the other person couldn't have done it. So therefore it's as if the other person is not participating. So therefore the person who could have done it on his own is chayef. The person who couldn't have done it on his own is considered to be an accessory. And therefore, in that case, the person who couldn't have done it on his own, could not have done it on his own, is potter. So here, when an elevator goes down, the elevator could have gone down on its own. Right? Elevator, by the virtue of its electric motor, can go down on its own. I could not have caused the elevator to go down on my own without having the assistance of the elevator motor which is involved. So therefore, the elevator, so to speak, is chayef for having done the malacha. I'm not chayef for having done the malacha. What?
You're talking about machines and people. Mora's talking about two people.
True, but what difference does it make since I'm not activating the machine? If I were to turn on the switch which made the elevator go, you're right, then I'm responsible for activating the machine. But here the machine is being activated and going up and down anyway without my direct participation. I'm not turning the machine on and off. If you would turn on electric light on Shabbos, right? The electric light is making the electric light go, but I turned on the electric light. But here the elevator is going up and down before I came into the elevator. So therefore, when I get into the elevator, it's considered as if the elevator could have done all the activity by itself, ignoring me. And that's why, so to speak, the elevator is chayev. And I'm potter. Now, potter in Hilchos Shabbos doesn't mean it's permissible. Potter means it's asur midrabbanan. But says Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, since it's only an issur of the Rabbanon, so therefore, you know what, I'll take into account everything I said and say that we will not prohibit a person from using an elevator even on the way down on Shabbos, as long as he doesn't have to push any buttons, nor that there are any load cells, nor any photoelectric cells which are involved. But the optimum Shabbos elevator, therefore, since Rabbi Shlomo Zalman only says, Ein limchos, I'm not going to protest against somebody who uses such an elevator, the optimum Shabbos elevator which the Institute recommended is one in which all excess electricity which is produced in the system goes to waste. It doesn't power any appliances. Because if it doesn't power any appliances, there's no malacha which is done. And they have ways of doing it, either by putting in extra capacitors or by just generating heat which doesn't heat anything up, just dissipates in the air. So that way, there is no beneficial activity being done where the extra electricity goes to waste. In those cases, a Shabbos elevator will be permissible according to all opinions, except those who say it's avshar milsa. Again, Reb Shlomo Zalman says, based on everything he said, a chiddush. Since using the elevator on Shabbos is only the Rabbanon anyway, why? Because the elevator could have done everything on its own. It didn't need me to enter Torah to participate. So therefore, the elevator is in essence responsible for everything. I'm only an accessory. An accessory is only transgressing the Rabbanon. Therefore, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, I rely on all the svaras which I said, that since there is no recognizable result because electricity was on, the light bulb was on before, the light bulb was on afterwards, I just changed the supply, which is not recognizable to the naked eye. Therefore, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, I will not protest, we don't protest against somebody who uses such an elevator. As long as there are no load cells, photoelectric cells, you don't have to push any buttons. But, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, but the Atum Shabbos elevator, which would not employ Rav Shlomo Zalman's Chiddush, is one in which there would be no way for the excess electricity to go into the building system and light all the lights.
Could you also do that and it'd just be an arbitrary
what?
Thing? Occasionally, arbitrarily, it sends it back in, and the rest of the time it wastes it. Because that's not a secretion.
I'm not, yeah, it would probably be harder to design such a system. Just wait. Let me just finish. There are a couple of related issues. First of all, escalators. Escalators, there is no excess electricity which is generated. By the way, escalators work. It's not a the counterweight type system. Therefore, you would be allowed to use an escalator on Shabbos.
You would.
You would be allowed to. It's going anyway, right? You're not doing anything. As long as it's automatic, right? As long as it's constantly going, you'd be allowed to use it. Avshar Milsa, most poskim didn't apply Avshar Milsa to elevators. So therefore, it wouldn't apply to escalators as well. You'd be allowed to use an escalator. I've never seen anybody use an escalator on Shabbos. But what? Theoretically, it'd be permissible in a mall, right? Mats that open doors, right? You know, in a supermarket. You're not allowed to step on a mat like that on Shabbos. If you step on a mat like that, you're completing a circuit and causing an electric motor to open the door. That's not permissible on Shabbos. Okay? We're over time. Ask me later. And finally, there's they're only an elevator building. Let's say you're a landlord. You have a building in which Jews are going to be using the elevator on Shabbos. Are you transgressing an Isser of Lifnei Iver by doing that? The answer is no. Because any time you provide something to another Jew, even though he's going to transgress an Isser with it, if the kli, the object, is not inherently intended for the purpose of Chilul Shabbos, it's okay. That's why you're allowed to be a landlord for a Mechalel Shabbos. How you're providing him with an apartment in which he's going to desecrate the Shabbos by turning lights on and off. But everything you're providing him with is not inherently expressly made for the purpose of transgressing prohibitions on Shabbos. And that's why the Isser of Lifnei Iver does not apply.
A moving sidewalk?
A moving sidewalk is the same thing like an escalator. And finally, going in with a goy. Let's say you don't have a Shabbos elevator, but you're going in with a goy at the same time and going up or down. So then it depends. On the way up, it's not a problem because you're not sending excess electricity. So therefore, you would be allowed to go up with the goy to the floor which he went up to. You wouldn't be allowed to stay in the elevator beyond that. Why? Because you can't open your own door when you get to your own floor. There's no way you'd be able to get out. You just have to remain in the elevator till the next goy got in, right? But you'd be allowed to go up with him to whichever floor he was going, again, assuming there are no problems with the photoelectric eyes and no problems with load cells in the floor of the elevator.
Basically, what you're saying then...
One second, let me just finish. You would not be allowed to... Going down with him would be the same problem we discussed before, because each additional person in the elevator caused the elevator motor to direct more electricity to the system in the building, and you would have to be relying on Rav Shlomo Zalman's Chiddush in order to go down with him in the elevator and say that since it's not Nikar, it's permissible. And again, Rav Shlomo Zalman says he doesn't protest against people who use elevators under those circumstances, but it doesn't seem like he'll recommend outright that it's the best thing to do. Yes?
Shabbos elevators using all these hotels.
Shabbos elevators in all these hotels. I don't know whether...
Yeah.
They automatically stop at each floor.
They shut off the electric eyes.
Yeah.
So going up would be permissible.
Going up would be permissible. Going down would be a problem. That's right. Because you're... No, because the excess electricity that you provide to the system, to the in order to power the appliances in the building. Yeah.
So basically...
You go down by the stairs.
If you're in Israel...
Yeah. On the way down.
Right.
On the way down.
Right.
On the way up, you don't have a problem.
Well, we don't know. They may have these capacities.
Yeah, unless you know that it was especially designed. There's a hechsher on it from the Machon Mada'i Technologi L'Bayot Balacha, then you'll be able to use it on the way down as well. Yeah. Okay.